evening and welcome everyone. I am Lisa Dalton and I'm here to help us get our Central Regional Council third meeting on the topic of reincarnation and karma moving along. And we're really excited that you're all here. It would be awesome if my fellow colleagues on the Central Regional Council might introduce themselves. So I'll let you guys jump in for a moment.
Hi, everyone. Oh. Go ahead.
Mary Ann Fieber, Dara in Menominee, Wisconsin, where we just had some good snow.
Yay!
Loya from Ann Arbor, Michigan. We got some freezing rain, kind of bad weather too.
Very good.
Hi, this is Hazel from Chicago, and we're cold as well.
It's good to be here. And David, and this is David Howerton from St. Louis. Hello, everyone.
Hi, welcome Central Regional Council team. And it would be wonderful now if we'd just spin around the circuit here. And what I have is I have 16 participants. And so if we can start first with the people who are just on the call, and maybe I will call your number, and everyone can mute themselves except for the person I call, and then that person can introduce themselves and just share where you're from and your name. So I see a 314-495-2476. Hi, and welcome. Want to give that another go?
That might be David Howerton.
Is that David? Yeah. Okay, David. Great. Okay, good, David. Thanks. So our next person is 320-632-5221. Welcome.
Yes, hello. This is Carol and Wayne from Little Falls, Minnesota.
Welcome, Carol and Wayne. Wonderful. And how about 314-368-5911?
Hi, that'll be me, Jonathan from Chicago.
Hi, Jonathan. Welcome again. Yay. And how about 512-383-5179.
Mary Lee Plementis in Austin, Texas.
Oh, hi, Mary Lee.
Hi.
How about 515-715-3724?
Hi, this is Doug Reed in Ames, Iowa.
Oh, Doug. Exciting. Ames, Iowa. Beautiful. How about Janice?
I'm from Winnipeg. I'm from Albany, Manitoba.
Wonderful. Thanks, Janice. And Miss Mary?
Hi, Mary Mertz, Salina, Kansas.
Beautiful. And Laura.
Laura, I am from St. Louis, Missouri.
Thank you, Laura.
And we have Diana.
Yes.
Diana is in the background. It looks like a picture hanging, but she's here.
Hi, Diana. And Camille.
Hi, this is Camille Vitrano from Frankfort, Michigan.
Thanks, Camille. Welcome. And Deb.
Yes, I'm Deb Pullen from Fargo.
Welcome, Deb. And Deborah Rogers.
Hello there. I am Deborah Rogers in Chicago. presently at Whole Foods shopping.
Thanks, Deborah. And Elizabeth. Elizabeth, you're muted, so you might. Maybe we'll jump down to.
Okay, there I am.
There you are. Yay. Where are you, Elizabeth?
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. Wonderful. Welcome, welcome. And how about Janice?
Janice, I already signed in from Albany, Manitoba, up in Canada.
Thank you. Thank you. And Nancy.
I'm from Arlington, Texas.
Yay, welcome, Nancy. Yay. And is that Mike over there on the side?
Yeah.
Welcome. How about Nick?
Hi, Nick from Chicago.
Hi, Nick. Welcome. And how about Pat?
I'm on Zoom.
One more time for us, Pat, please.
Pat, you need to unmute.
There, I guess. Okay, I'm in Austin, Texas.
Oh, beautiful, Pat. Thank you. Thank you so much and welcome. And Travis, I know we said hi earlier. Did we say hi now?
Travis in England, Arkansas.
Excellent. Thank you, Travis. And is Paul around anywhere? Is there anyone that I missed? Go ahead and jump in.
We have a new guest.
All righty. Well,
we have one new guest over here. Come on.
Hello, everybody. Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, she's in, from St. Louis as well. You can see your name.
My name is Ariel. Hi, everybody.
Okay. Hi, Ariel. Welcome. Welcome. Well, we're all so excited that you're all here. It's a wonderful turnout. And to help us set the tone, I would love to turn it over to Hazel, who will read a verse for us.
Thanks, Lisa. And I invite others to, I think next time we send out a notice, we'll make sure to have this verse included. I find it to be a really wonderful thing to work with, you know, to meditate with. And so I'll speak it now, and maybe you can try to take it in as if your future self was speaking it to you right now. The wishes of the soul are sprouting. The deeds of the will wax and grow. The fruits of life are ripening. I feel my destiny. My destiny finds me. I feel my star. My star finds me. I feel my goals in life. My goals in life are finding me. My soul and the world are one great unity. Life grows more radiant about me. Life grows more challenging for me. Life grows more abundant within me.
Thank you, Hazel. Today, our topic is the first chapter in the book, A Western Approach to Reincarnation and Karma, which is a selected set of lectures and writings by Rudolf Steiner, edited and introduced by Rene Querido. And our chapter today, chapter one, is entitled Natural and Chance Illnesses in the Human Being. And to begin to give us some leading thoughts on the first section, Laura, come on forward, and everybody else, go ahead and mute, please.
Okay, so healing have changed radically during the last century. In the century 16 and 17 centuries, at that time, illness had a name, and there was a cure to be found about in earth about that illness. And people felt secure then. Around the 19th century, the opposite views it was expressed. In nihilism, this trend that had fundamental doubts about the connection between the illness and the individual medication or treatment technique. So self-healing is what was happening then, or the people start thinking about self-healing. Dr. Scott said, we can diagnose an illness and describe it, but have no means for them to find a medication with which to treat this illness. And Dr. Diet or Dietz, I don't know how to pronounce it, he made a statistic of having people with pneumonia, and he had two groups, one that gave drugs and the other one that he was treated with no drugs, and the same amount of people were cured and the same amount of people died from it. So what they did at that time, these doctors started to prescribe a mild solution of the gum arabic, I don't know how to say, arabic. So they thought that it would make the same effect of any drug. So then it talks about the self-healing and the connection with the karma. And the illness came about, and how they were saying how self-healing is impossible at the time. So when one person had an illness, in themselves, they had the feeling that they can overcome this illness. The type of illnesses that are on the surface there is a relationship with a neurosis, neurasthenia, and hysteric conditions. And the causes can be found in ideas, and ideas that have been forgotten, and they are out of our awareness, but sunk very deep inside of us. And they are intruders in our soul, and they work or they manifest in an illness later on. So what has been forgotten still work in us as forces bonding with our system of deeper forces. These forces, these deep forces, when we pass the gate of death, they still work then, but can be transformed. And this transformation then can come about in the following life as organizing forces. So the formative forces that are present in our body come from the life before, from the soul life before, and also from the ideas of before, in the incarnation before. And in the ideas, we swing from Lucifer influence and Ahriman influence. influences. And we commit a transgression calling forth the astral body. For example, anger is related to luciferic illnesses. If this becomes a formative forces in our body, then in the next incarnation, we would have luciferic causes of illnesses. So this is my part.
Thank you. Thank you, Laura. Yes. And to continue, yes, let's go to Camille.
Thank you. Steiner is talking about the difference here between the luciferic influence and the aromatic influence in our health illness profile. And as Laura said, it is the astral body that is driving the bus, so to speak, when we are under this influence, this luciferic influence. And if these actions or transgressions become formative forces in our newly forming body, in a new existence, what will result are the luciferic causes of illness, which he gives an example of in a minute. The aromatic forces, on the other hand, work from the outside inward, and they too can become formative forces for the incarnating organism, resulting in tendencies toward illnesses that have an aromatic character to them. Then the example that he gives is, if in a preceding lifetime one has done everything to cause a lack of self-confidence or poor self-image, and the way he says it is like this: if one has prepared the eye to relate nothing to itself, to lose itself in generalities, then in the next life, one will have set up an opportunity to overcome resistance, thereby strengthening and perfecting the I. And the, quote, radical example that he gives, Steiner gives, is cholera, as it provides an opportunity to overcome resistance, leading to a better self-image through self-discipline, which can happen either in the next incarnation or in the present incarnation if one achieves a recovery of the illness. Then he gives an example of the opposite nature. Malaria, he says, presents the opportunity to balance out an inflated self-image that has been cultivated by the soul through actions and feelings of an earlier life. Here he brings in the idea that a person's eye finds its physical expression in the blood. The opportunities present in both these illnesses have everything to do with the blood. In the case of cholera, there is a thickening of the blood. This provides the opportunity for resistance that a weak self-image has to overcome. In contrast, with malaria, a disintegration of sorts takes place in the blood. Here, an overly strong self-image needs, and I want to quote from the book, the possibility of being taken to the point of absurdity. And when the blood is disintegrating, the exertions of an overly strong ego all come to naught. And this is what is presented, the opportunity that's presented in the disintegration of the blood. But of course, he adds that these connections within the organism are extraordinarily subtle, and they take time and attention to understand. Then he goes on to talk about if a person's soul acquires a tendency to overcome something in a certain direction, this leads to someone taking on an illness in order to fight that illness off. He goes so far as to say that the possibility of a cure is the only reason to call forth the illness. Then he uses a term which I've never seen before. He uses the term total karma, He says, a cure takes place when a person's total karma is such that through overcoming the illness in question, the person acquires forces that really enable him or her to make progress through work on the physical plane for the remainder of life until death. So if a person truly overcomes his or her illness, forces become available to them for the rest of their life that were not available before. Now we're at, if anyone is wants to follow, we're at the top of page 6. He uses this term, total karma, again, when he says it may be that the individual's total karma is such that the intention is present to structure the organism in such a way as to receive forces that would lead toward wholeness now that the illness in question has been overcome. But there are many factors at work here. There are some cases where the overcoming of an illness, although it brings strength, must leave part of the organism weak. In such cases, one's work on the physical plane is not facilitated, but what is gained will be applied as a person passes through the gate of death. This will be evident in the new body's formation at rebirth. I really like this particular section because it reminds us again that no effort is wasted in any of this work that we do trying to overcome an illness or in any of our inner work. It is not everything that we do that is done for this incarnation. Next, Steiner talks about how illnesses that lead neither to complete cure nor to death result in a chronic condition. Here, everything has been done to create balance between the ether body and the physical body, but there is still a lack of harmony between the ether body and the astral body. And while it's important for the individual to make full use of the healing that has occurred, it is rarely the case. This is rarely what happens in life. Normally, a person swings back and forth between trying to find a cure and not being cured completely and is caught in a vicious cycle. He says it would be very helpful if a person could isolate the part of the organism that has undergone healing and let it live for itself, so to speak, separate from what is still out of order. But this usually has to do with the inner soul aspect of the organism. Unfortunately, he doesn't give an example of that particular case. I found myself wishing he had. And then finally, at the top of page 7, he adds that a person left with a chronic illness lives under the influence of that condition from then on and can never really fully forget about the illness. The person is constantly occupied in their thoughts with the unwell part of the organism and is therefore compelled to bring it into connection with the healthy part of the organism, irritating it all over again. Hence the vicious cycle that he referred to earlier. And I guess the next section is for Mary.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mary.
All right, so the third section, Steiner begins by describing the spiritual state of someone with a chronic illness, as Camille was saying. A chronic illness that has not been caused by a previous acute illness. So you can have chronic illness after your acute illness, or you can just have a chronic illness that wasn't caused by something before. All right, so if a chronic condition sets in without acute illness causing it, that indicates that the balance between the physical body and etheric body is shaky. And that leads to constant irritation in the astral body, and this brings on the chronic illness. But the sufferer is unconscious of this astral irritation. Steiner says, if such people could manage, through strength of will or soul training, to forget about their condition, at least for a certain time, this would be a source of great satisfaction and would provide the strength they need to continue in this direction. And that's on page 8. So the forgetting he talks about doesn't mean just try to ignore it, because he says you can't really just ignore it, but he says your best recourse is to apply the freed forces to something spiritual, to a spiritual content that totally engages the soul. He notes that being occupied by something else can help us get our minds off our pain for a while, as I'm sure most of us have experienced. Psychologists call something that we're totally immersed in as a flow experience. So it sounds kind of like that's what Steiner's talking about here. So that could be helping someone else, doing art, anything that fully engages us. For instance, an acquaintance of mine who was in rehab discovered adult coloring books, which are all the rage right now, and she poured herself into those instead of just sitting passively watching TV, and was able to use her forces in some way. So these kinds of experiences show us that, in Steiner's words, we are not totally powerless when the karmic effects of transgressions in earlier lifetimes come to expression in illness. Between death and our next rebirth, the consequences of our past actions can penetrate deeply enough to cause illness in our next life. So Steiner says on page 9, it must also be possible to turn this process back into a conscious one. He says, can't we replace the healing process with its spiritual equivalent? If we are clever enough, can't we transform the illness into a spiritual process and use our soul forces to carry out the self-education we were meant to undergo through the illness? As Camille was saying, illnesses are these opportunities to strengthen ourselves by overcoming resistance. They are responses from our pre-birth time to our previous life on Earth. So I think Steiner's saying that in the age of the consciousness soul, we can avert the need for illness later in this lifetime by means of our spiritual efforts. And he gives the example of a woman who was very occupied with the life of soul in her previous life. She pretty much ignored the outer world. Then she got measles in her next life as an adult. Steiner says that if she could have overcome her tendency towards self-deception in that next life, the measles wouldn't have been necessary. So in his example, she did not avert the illness, but she could have, he said. So this was very interesting to me because I had an experience kind of along these lines when I was 30. I began to suffer with adult onset asthma. I lived in Pennsylvania then and had access to an anthroposophic doctor, and he said the asthma was about overcoming fear. He advised me to go out and do things that I was afraid of, to engage the ego and intentionally put myself in situations that I would normally avoid because they were kind of scary. Not going out on the streets of Philadelphia late at night or anything, nothing foolhardy, but just something that I would normally shrink from. So right after that, an opportunity arose to try out for a play at the local theater. And for me, being in a play is not frightening, but trying out for play was a scary thought. So I went ahead and did that just because he had said, do scary things. And so I did some other things that I found frightening, and I noticed that the asthma definitely did decrease. So I have not used my inhaler for 20 years. I don't even have it anymore. I still tend to get bronchitis almost annually, so that tells me I have a lot of work to do. But it does indeed seem like it's possible to turn the process of healing into a conscious one. So, Travis, I know I jumped on the beginning of section four there. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Mary. Travis.
So picking up on page 10, he continues with the example of the woman with the measles. And as
Travis, I lost. Travis, I lost your sound. Did anyone else?
Yes, can't hear Travis.
Okay.
Travis, try removing your headset and can you connect via phone, telephone?
Perhaps while Travis is figuring out how to speak with us, we can have a little discussion about that wonderful story Mary told, and perhaps others might want to share. And if you're not speaking, please mute your phone. We're getting some sort of movement going on.
How are we doing, Travis? Close?
Can y'all hear me?
Yes, we can. Beautiful.
Can you, is there feedback? Okay. All right. I apologize for that, guys. All right. So, picking up.
Hang on one second. Alberto, can you make sure that Travis is muted on his video?
Yeah, let me double check. I can see he's muted, but let me... Yeah, I wonder if we were getting feedback from someone else. So everyone, please make sure you are muted if you're not speaking. Travis, I think I accidentally muted your phone. Hold on. I thought that's the phone we were getting feedback from. One second. Oh boy.
Add and D.
Okay. Okay. I think you are back on.
Can y'all hear me? How about should I continue, Lisa? All right.
You know what, Travis? Let's see if you can lower your volume on your computer.
How's that?
All right. Let's try that.
All right. Very good. I do apologize, everybody, for all this mix-up. I knew my microphone, I think the microphone in my laptop is not working, and that's why I was using the headset, but obviously it's not working either. So we'll continue on. So at the top of page 11, he's actually says there, and I love the quote, which I think is on the, it was in the email that y'all sent out. He says, as you can see from this, it really is possible to speak of changing an illness back into a spiritual process in a certain respect. It is extremely significant that if the soul takes up this process as a motto for life, this engenders a way of looking at things that has a healing effect on the soul. So this idea that we can look at our illness instead of being, like so many people think of it, as a victim or a victim of something out here that's attacking us, we can see that we created this illness, we created this opportunity for healing so that we could develop these soul forces, which is pretty awesome to think about. And then he has a paragraph here in the middle of page 11, which, you know, I thought was interesting because he seemed to be kind of talking about people coming to the Anthroposophical Society, which he's calling it the Theosophical Society. But I think he was still using that term when he wrote, gave this lecture, but that people coming in, and he says they approach theosophy with many of the same interests that they have outside the movement, as well as with bad habits they possess outside. And much of the shadow side of their age is brought in. But when the shadowy aspects become apparent in such people, others say that theosophy caused it, which is, of course, a very cheap and easy way to look at it. And I don't really know how that paragraph fits in with the rest of this lecture. So some of y'all may can elucidate on that for me, because it seems like he was making a kind of an aside comment to some people in the audience that he wanted to make a point for, which I thought was rather interesting. But it's probably good for us to hear that today, that I have to remember that I've only been an anthroposophist now for 13 years. And so when I came to anthroposophy, I had all these habits of soul and these character defects, if you will, that I brought with me into anthroposophy. And as I've grown and studied and learned, you know, more about it, you know, those have been with me too. So anyway, it got kind of sort of me thinking about that. You know, what am I bringing to this that's maybe not for the best, you know, for the whole good. But anyway, he says, starts talking about looking at the karmic thread. He said that the karmic threads only give us one half of the truth. And he says, we'll touch on these questions in later lectures. And then he goes into the whole idea of how to distinguish between an illness with outer causes and one that is inherent in a person's system. And this whole section really gave me cause to think, because he talks about the example of germs. And some of y'all don't know me, but I'm a chiropractor. And, you know, and this whole lecture applied to me, because when I was interested in me, Mary, like your example, when I was born, I had all these major health problems. And I mean, at 6 weeks of age, I almost died. And anyway, long story, you know, I recovered from all of that. But as a result, I was allergic to penicillin. And so, like, I never took antibiotics. I've never been vaccinated. I've never been immunized. I've never took an antibiotic until I was 38 years old. And so part of my deal is I don't believe in the germ. And I've never believed in germs, that germs cause disease. So he talks about that here, that, you know, at one time people thought that disease came from the devil or from the bad ethers or you know, from germs. And of course, today, you know, we have these apparent outside causes of illness. And he addresses that. And at the top of page 13, he actually says that we are now beginning on the chapter on natural and chance illnesses in the human being. He said there is no way around it. Today, we must make an initial attempt to shed light on the term chance. So then he goes into the whole idea of chance, and he goes back into the luciferic and the harmonic influences. And he starts off with the example of Galileo and seeing the swinging chandelier and the Tower of Pisa, and how that was apparently just a chance occurrence that happened. How that he just happened to see that, and it made him think. And so we just attribute that to chance. He also gives I won't go into that because that's the next person's bit, the example about Luther coming on later in the chapter. But anyway, in fact, I think that's probably my section. I think I'm going to turn it over to whoever has part five, because that gets to the really good part of this lecture, in my opinion. And again, I'm sorry for all the technical difficulties, folks.
Hang in there, Travis. I'm looking because we have Paul scheduled. Is Paul with us? Because perhaps we might invite you, Travis, to continue a little bit if Paul's not here.
Okay.
So
I can. Are you there, Paul? Okay. All right. Well, so he says, then he goes into the example about Luther, you know, and how that, you know, Luther never wanted to get his doctorate of theology, and that he had to be talked into it by a friend of his. This chance occurrence, he ran into an old college classmate and talked him into getting his doctorate of theology, which led to his whole thesis and, you know, basically changing world history, you know, changing everything. So then he goes into the idea of how these luciferic and harmonic principles work in our life. He says, now both the luciferic and the harmonic lead us to give ourselves up to illusion. The luciferic principle or the influences gives us illusion to our own inner aspect. You know, we're able to misjudge our own intentions or our own motives. Which I guess, you know, I've done a bunch of in my life and, you know, happens so well. And then the harmonic influences is more insinuates itself in those times when we have confusion, you know, when our thoughts get, when we get so far as we can get logically, and then we hit that point to where there's no real logical sense. And then Armin will interject some Maya in there, some falsehood. Yeah, I think that's pretty. And then so he said, spiritual investigators who notice such a fact will, of course, see through to its true significance and characterize it as an interaction of two things, our consciousness and what prevails in the depths beneath the threshold of our consciousness. And then he goes into talking about some of the psychologists and some of the psychologists' beliefs. And I'm sorry, guys, I really didn't prepare to talk about this part of the chapter, but. Let's see. He says that, for example, it's typical that the tricks played on us by the luciferic influences, which transform our soul life into Maya, so that we are capable of pretending that our motives are quite different from the ones that really prevail within us. He said this is an area which we should try to implement stricter self-discipline. He said when words merely sound nice and give even the slightest impression that a sentence represents a beneficial action, then the nice sounding sentence is already seducing us into believing that the motive in question is present in our soul. So that's pretty, how I can word it, if I word it nicely to myself, I believe it. You know, so it's almost like we can believe our own lies, if you will. And then he goes into the Armin as a principle that mingles with our perception and insinuates itself from outside. And again, where our thoughts get tangled up, he says, that's when the harmonic principle seizes the opportunity to get inside us and through, like as if through a crack in an outer wall. And he goes back to the example of Galileo at the Tower of Pisa, you know, when he, with that point, and I don't really quite understand this, you know, but he says that he came up when he saw the chandelier and his thoughts get confused at the point where we arrive at the swinging chandelier. And I guess really it makes sense. There's the tower and it's standing still. So why is this chandelier just sitting there spinning for no apparent reason? The mind gets tangled up, to use his words there. And he says, this is where we also come up against the wall of what we call chance. So it can be found right there where Armin becomes most dangerous. It is through the phenomena we call coincidence or chance that we are most easily fooled by the harmonic influence. And you know, when I think about that, to how many times in my life where, you know, I thought that was a good thing. You know, it's a coincidence, a happy coincidence. So now I'm beginning to realize, makes me think that the next time I realize there's a chance or a coincidence, instead of automatically thinking that it's giving me something I won't necessarily, I want to look at it more objectively, you know, to see, is Armin trying to interject, you know, making me think, oh, I should do this. See, if the star is lined up, it's a chance, it's a great opportunity, whatever it may be, the coincidence that presents it, you know, we need to really question ourselves on that. At least that's how I read this. He says, thus we will learn to understand that in those cases where we feel obliged to speak of chance, this does not lie in the nature of the facts themselves, but rather in us, in our own development. So anytime I have a chance occurrence in my life, it's nothing to do with what's going on. It's something I've developed in myself that brought about this seeming chance. Anyway, I think that's pretty much the end of the chapter. I'll stop there. I look forward to hearing everybody's comments on that. So, thanks.
Thanks for winging it there, Travis. We appreciate it. Absolutely. I think we're going to turn it over to Mary Ann, who's going to help facilitate our conversation. And she's going to also chat just a little bit about how we're building our skill sets with this format of Zoom and how to handle the conversation. So, Marianne.
Right. So hopefully I can do this clearly. The screen looks different from when I looked at it the last time when we had our conference call. But what we want to do is have as free of a conversation as we can. But what challenges us with this format is people jumping on top of one another because we don't know who's going to speak and all of that. Now, if you notice at the bottom of your screen, if you're on the computer, sorry for those folks who are not on the computer and you're on a phone, but we'll get to you in a minute. You can see where there's something that says participants 22. If you click on that, you'll be able to see who's all on the call on the right-hand side of your screen. Is that ringing true for everybody? Yes or no? Yes. Okay. So then you can see also that there's this raise hand feature that if you have something to say, you can raise your hand and we'll try and then call you out. So if somebody's speaking and you have something you want to respond to, it raise your hand and we'll do our best, I'll do my best and Alberto as well, to call on the next person to try and help facilitate that. There's also the chat feature that you can also click on and type a message. That if somebody is speaking and you just want to reiterate something in there and you don't necessarily need to jump in with something to say, you can type that in and then again, we'll call on you and say, oh, do you want to share that thought? Just as a way to try and facilitate this, not to squelch anybody at all. And then what we'll also try and do is periodically in the conversation, reach out like Lisa did at the beginning to the phone caller people to say, phone call people, because we can't see that you're raising your hand, but we will try and acknowledge you and get you also in here to have your voice. We really want to be able to have everybody kind of feel like they are part of this conversation. Of course, you don't need to speak if you don't want to and you just want to take it in. But we do want to invite everybody to participate as best we can. So those are the tools that we have, are the chats to help us see who is wanting to say something, and then also the raising of hands. Does that all sound good? So we, excuse me, I'm getting over an illness, probably chronic. So if we, if anybody would like to start and have something to offer, certainly Travis has raised a couple of questions in the portion that he read. We'll do our best. The Central Regional Council members will attempt to kind of step in, but really this is all of us. This is a study group. You know, no one's an authority. So I am going to stop. Oh, from Deborah Rogers. He's hand feature is available on phone as well. It's under the three dots. Click on that and raise hand is there. Oh, thank you, Deborah. Fabulous. So there is a raising of a hand feature on the phones as well. So it's under the three dots, I think, on your keypad somewhere, and your raising of the hand is there. Thank you. So we'll try and get you in there. Ooh, Lisa Dalton has her hand raised.
Well, I was really curious about that finale questions that you just mentioned, Marianne, that came up with Travis, and thanks again, Travis, for picking that up. I'm thinking about what the consequences are when we attribute an event to chance. And just for me, it seems like when we attribute it to chance, I miss out on an opportunity to understand what that event is about. That if I ask the question, if this is not chance, but my karma brought this into place and the work that I've been actively doing, then how can this, for example, how is this chance moment helping me heal, or what is it helping me heal, or where can I go from there? So that was it. Other thoughts about that?
Camille?
Yeah, related to what Lisa's just talking about, recognizing something behind an action that is not chance. That was my reading of the thing with Galileo and the chandelier, was that it wasn't just by chance that he happened to notice the way it swings and the relationship between that and the pulsing of his own heart. My understanding is that Steiner is saying that it was everything that led him to that point, that it was a moment of destiny that made him recognize something there. And that just what Lisa said, that if we dismiss it as just a chance occurrence, we're missing the whole point of destiny. And I wanted to say one other thing with relation to chance. So I'm getting the impression, especially from that last paragraph in the chapter, that Steiner is saying there is no such thing as chance. Maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm overstating it, but that's the impression that I'm getting. And I find it really ironic because I was a student in the last class that Renee Carito ever taught at Rudolf Steiner College. And we were talking about how things are meant to be or not meant to be. And then Renee piped up and he said, but sometimes things go wrong. And I thought that was brilliant because it gives us back our will. It gives us back our free will. A statement like that. That's all.
Thank you. Who's next? Travis.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing I think about with this is, you know, with our modern pharmaceutical industry, you know, because when you look at the causes of disease in this country, to me, so many of the causes of disease are diseases of lifestyle. And how does that fit into what we're studying here today? So, you know, if you think, you know, you take, for example, if our diet, you know, it's our high carb and high sugar, and we're seeing all these diseases of inflammation and diabetes and, you know, all these diseases that people are contracting. And so they're apparently coming from outside causes or from, you know, diseases from toxins in our environment. You know, I see a lot of that. I'm in farm country and, you know, our cancer rates are so much higher in this region than they are nationally. What do you guys think? I mean, it's not chance. So is it, on the one hand, is this these souls, is it the soul using what's available, or is this some sort of harmonic deception that's taking place? Where, you know, where particularly with the pharmacy, the pharmaceutical industry, you know, I'm totally amazed at how quickly some people will take these drugs that cause other illnesses. They get on, create chronic conditions by taking medications. And that's really, to me, that's what so much of medicine is these days. It's just managing your chronic condition as it gets worse. But is that what that soul is wanting to experience? Have the souls incarnated at this time to be here to avail themselves of all these crazy influences that we have in our environment? Y'all get where I'm going with this. And I was going to, if y'all have any ideas, I'd like to hear it. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, there's been some chatting going on. And so there was a statement from Carolyn. So there is no such thing as chance or accident. Mary responds, that's how I understand it too. And then everything is cause and effect or karma. And another one is, my impression is there is very little chance. So that related a little bit to that previous thing. But with regards to what Travis, from Carolyn, everything moves toward evolution or potential for good. Yes, Romans 12. So that's an interesting connection there. But I do wonder about, you know, this thing, Travis, that you're saying with what's out there today, and how that is impacting us. And yet we're here at this time. And there's that phrase that's attributed, you know, love the times you're in. Like, we're also here to face these challenges to our system, maybe, as well as part of our evolutionary development. I don't know. That's a thought I have with that. I do not profess to know exactly. Oh, from Nancy Meziel, one's consciousness plays a part of the condition. Each one has a personal perspective, reaction, and belief about our condition. What we can do with that. I'm struggling here, just so you know, with like having my Zoom or my chat line up and then being able to see if hands are raised. So I'm learning. So maybe Alberto, you can track hand raises and if anybody's raised a hand.
So Camille's hand is raised, but I don't know if it's from the previous time.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. I'll lower it again.
Okay. Oh, that's another lesson is that we have to lower our hand after we've raised it.
So Lisa.
Yeah, I feel like what you're speaking about actually brings up the other interesting note I made during the sharing part, which is this discussion about total karma. And in the chapter, in this lecture, he implies that we're going to be learning more about other influences. Yeah. And that idea of what total karma is, I get an image of there's a karma of the era. There's a karma of the region, for example, that the karma of the farming region that has chosen to chemicalize the land for materialistic reasons to increase the profitability, lower the cost of loss of, you know, like of crops, increase, you know, all the things, controlling the genetics, etc. All those sort of what seem to be aramonically driven choices are, you know, maybe influencing the karma of the region. And so that's just an example of possibly how, you know, some level of like the higher cancer rates, for example, in that region may be playing out. And it would be very interesting to see how that karma then shows up in next incarnations. So,
thank you.
Total karma.
Total karma. And it looks like Travis raised his hand too.
Yeah, I just had a thought, you know, talking about, you know, the being incarnated in this age with all the, so, you know, could someone say, well, it's just by chance that I'm incarnated in this part of this part of human evolution. And so I'm going to take advantage of everything that the world has to offer. And, you know, I'm going to, you know, I get sick, I'm going to take the medications. I'm going to do what my doctor tells me to do without thought, just, you know, or, so the chance, you know, as I understand it, that the chance is that we're arming. When we see that a belief, we're thinking that something happens just because of chance, that's when arming can slip in. I don't necessarily know if chance never happens or not, but when I perceive that something is happening by chance, what do I tell myself about it? That's the significance of what he's saying. So to use what you were saying, Marianne, so if we're born in this age, you know, maybe the chance, maybe the real, I don't know, is not to do that, to do the to not take advantage of that. And maybe to be like what we are as anthroposophists, standing up to show a different way. If that makes sense. Am I being totally confusing here? I feel like I am, but. So yeah, is there not chance? Yeah.
Sorry.
All right.
No, it's okay.
All right. Well, anyway, I'll stop there. So it's just triggering a lot of interesting thoughts for me.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So there was another chat. Let's see. Carolyn. Carolyn, can you speak and say what you're saying? Carolyn?
Well, Alberto here, while maybe Carolyn may want to say something else on chat, but one thing that I'll say, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. You know, the typical knowledge we get from, you know, mass media about karma is that it's something that happens to us, you know, cause and effect. But it's something that is kind of comes to us kind of from the outside. And, you know, what we're learning here is that we are the ones who, between death and a new birth, we are the ones who choose our next experiences, next life experiences, to even out our previous karma. And so it's kind of difficult to understand how we chose or choose to have a difficult life experience. But that's what we're learning here. If a difficult experience or illness or whatever condition, we chose it because this is what's going to teach us
what we need to learn. And I don't know how this relates to what Travis was saying. Like, did we choose, did, you know, I guess people chose to live in a rural area or in a big, big city. Both of them have their own challenges, you know? So I don't know. It's not an answer necessarily, just an observation.
Great. We have Mary and then Deb. Both have their hands raised. Mary and then Deb.
So when you were talking about the choices we make in our lives between death and rebirth, Alberto, it made me remember the part where Steiner says, you know, that's why we see so many childhood illnesses, because we want to get that self-education or that opportunity, you know, as soon as possible, as soon as we incarnate, all right, let's get to it. Let's get to that work and overcome those resistances. I like that part.
Thank you. Deb?
Well, yes, I'm just wondering about our karma that involves our temperaments and different traits and personality things that we come with. And so if a person would have a tendency to be phlegmatic and not want to exercise and be really kind of just a couch potato, and also have a tendency towards gluttony, you know, and we're living in an age, now we've chosen to live in an age where there's all this junk food around. So maybe that we choose to come and to try to overcome those tendencies, we resist that, you know, we go out and exercise and we don't eat the junk food or something. So in a way but if we don't, then we end up with diabetes. And that's going to affect our next lifetime. We're going to have to, our karma will involve trying to figure out what to do about that.
Thank you. Laura and then Carolyn.
Okay, so two things. I'm not sure if I can remember the two thoughts, but the first one is to Travis, that when we find something that one can say, oh my God, this is coming to me, I'm in the middle of it, why is happening to me? When we have to see, here we see things separately. But if when we meditate and we can go to the spiritual world, we are the thing. So if we can have the thought of the thing that is in front of us here in the physical world that we do not like and say, I loved this before I came. I loved it with all my heart. I wanted this to happen. Even though it might be difficult to see this, but if we do it enough, then something happens. It's interesting to see the switch or the transformation. Maybe hold that thought for a week, every night. And then at one point, something transforms that from resistance, you become to love the thing that is in front of you. You start understanding. You become bigger. On the other side, we are the thing. We are big. We are one with that thing. So that is one thought for you, Travis. And then the second one is, I don't know, the lady that spoke just now,
Deb,
about the food. I think you were talking about the food and all these things. Let me see if I remember now. I think it escaped my mind now, but yes. So what I see there is not about changing something. If I'm eating the wrong food, oh, I have to eat right and change it from the outside. The change does not come from outside anymore. I think that was in another epoch. Now, going through the mystery of Golgotha and really feel the Christ in us and in others and in many situations, and let the Christ work on our hearts and become whatever we see that we don't like and unite with the world, that feeling makes us change in a different way. Things. It's just from that feeling so deep that we do, the things change, or whatever is around us changes. So those are the two thoughts I wanted to contribute.
Thank you, Laura. Yes. Carolyn.
Yes, I wanted to offer this Romans 8 scripture verse. I don't know how people feel about the Bible or New Testament, but I just did want to offer this, as I think that sometimes there's a lot of wisdom and pointers here. And I start in Romans 8, verse 25. But if we hope for what is still unseen by us, we wait for it with patience and composure, so that the Holy Spirit comes to our aid and bears us up in our weaknesses. For we do not know what prayer to offer or how to offer it worthily as we ought. But the Spirit himself goes to meet our supplication and pleads in our behalf with unspeakable yearnings and groanings too deep for utterance. I think just, I'm going to break there. There's two more verses, but I want to say that there's just such a mystery of what goes deep within us is trying to work itself out, and that there's a meeting of that Spirit with us in that place where we might call it a weakness or an illness. And so then in verse 27, it goes on and says that he searches our hearts, searches the hearts of men, knowing what is in the mind of the Holy Spirit, what his intent is, because the Spirit intercedes and pleads before God in behalf of the saints according to and in harmony with God's will. We are assured and know that God, being a partner in our labor, all things work together and are fitting into a plan for good to and for who love God and are called according to his design and purpose. So the idea is that everything is working out for this good, even when it seems weak or not so good, that we do have this partnership with divine or divine consciousness or whatever we want to call it, who knows us so well and is working things out as we align or as we come into a conscious awareness that something, even in a weakness, is meant for good.
Thank you. So I'm cognizant of the time, and I think we have a little bit of business to attend to. One is David Howerton helping to set up the next series of leading thoughters, or what, I'm not sure what we call ourselves, but so he broke out the next lecture. But I think before he does that, if I could just let everybody know that our next meeting in May, it's a little bit of a shift, but we have Linda Berg is going to make a presentation on biography and how it connects with our sending out a biography exercise for everybody to take up in the course of a few weeks, so that when we meet together at the beginning of May, we can report out of that work that we've done with ourselves. And then she'll follow that up as well with an exercise we'll do together on this call. So just so you know, it'll be a new way of working again. But Linda Berg is in our region and is an incredible individual who has been working with biography forever, and it's great that she's going to make this presentation. So just keep your eyes and ears out, excuse me, for that information so we can prepare ourselves in that way for her presentation in May. And now if I can turn it over to David.
Okay, thank you everyone that shared their leading thoughts this evening. And everyone for their stirring thoughts and questions. It's a wonderful discussion. So we're looking for some volunteers for that next group study that we'll be doing on Chapter 2. It is elemental events, volcanic eruptions, and epidemics in relation to karma. And it's only about 19 pages, so everybody would have around 4 pages apiece. Who would like to do the first part of that chapter? I know most of us are muted, but we might unmute ourselves at this point and speak up.
Would this be in June? Excuse me. I want to know. In June?
Yes, it would be June.
The first week, okay. I don't know if I can, I mean, I'm offering myself at one point. I know that other people may want, but if there is a spot that is needed, I can do, okay?
Okay, would you like the beginning of the chapter? That is page 19 through 22.
Okay.
And it's the beginning through where it says power underlying illness.
Okay. 1922. Can you do it for me?
We have a second.
I'm happy
volunteer.
To do one too, David. David, I'm happy to do one. It's Marianne.
Okay. How about page 22 through 26?
Okay.
It's from people who enjoy.
Yep.
To a genuine schooling.
Perfect.
David, it's Janice from Canada. I'm willing to do some too.
Great, Janet. How about pages 26 through 30?
Okay.
From Lucifer Draws Back.
Yep.
To Of the Ether Body.
Yep, okay.
Janice, can you give us your email address, please?
Yeah, it's... JN like in Nancy Reed. I do get the emails.
Okay.
It's JN like in Nancy Reed, R-E-I-D, number1@hotmail.com.
Thank you.
Deanna, yes, wants
one. I have Janice's address from the meeting we had in Twin Cities in November.
So Deanna wants to do a section?
Yes.
Okay, Deanna, it is page 30 through 33 from Legends and Myths to Their Good Accomplishments.
Good.
And we have one more part of that chapter. Do we have one more volunteer?
And do we have Diana's email?
Yeah.
Yes,
we do.
Okay.
Any of the phone callers want to do it that we don't see you? No.
It's only page.
Oh, who's talking? Sorry.
Volunteer. If no one else wants to do it, I can do it.
Hazel.
Yeah.
Thank you, Hazel.
Sure.
That's what page? 33-37. Okay. From The Good Thing to the end of the chapter.
Okay. Great.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
So very good. We got all our business done. I hope that was satisfying, if it helped ease the conversation to get being called on and kind of, I think we'll get better and better at that, but it just seems that it eases up, you know, oh, when do I talk? But to know that that's somehow being watched. So thank you for your patience, and as we're learning that process as well. And so we should be wrapping up. But there's a verse.
Which Hazel will do.
Who are you calling a witch?
Oh. Okay.
So let's try to keep in mind what we heard tonight, what we read, and put those thoughts into this verse from our dear Rudolf Steiner. The wishes of the soul are sprouting. The deeds of the will wax and grow. The fruits of life are ripening. I feel my destiny. My destiny finds me. I feel my star. My star finds me. I feel my goals in life. My goals in life are finding me. My soul and the world are one great unity. Life grows more radiant about me. Life grows more challenging for me. Life grows more abundant within me. And we will send this. Thank you.
Excellent. Thanks, everybody. Godspeed.
Happy Easter, everyone.
Yeah. Alberto will have the recording of this, and he'll let you know when that's available. Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.